And you were doing your work, or perhaps you are not doing your work.
Because if really you did do your work, what were you doing? What did you monitor? Why couldn't you detect this at an earlier stage before this continued for a period of 5 years? Because there is a lot of money that has been wasted here. There's been fruitless expenditure, irregular expenditure due to no competitive bidding, to cancel it, due to cancellation of tender. What is your duty, actually? You just went there, monitored, saw irregularities, did nothing, or perhaps made some recommendations and didn't make any follow-up. And if you did make any follow-up, if you saw that the situation was not improving for the past 5 years, what did you do? Did you just recommend? At the end of the month, you end your salaries, and you didn't care if, you know, taxpayers' money was misused or not. Thank you.
You gave the meeting guidance, and we can't sit in our own meeting together with Member Mokot to listen while he's making insinuations. We have to call her to order.
What order?
Honorable, sometimes for the sake of the meeting, you allow people to ask. These people, they are capable public servants, they'll respond. And as people use wrong language to communicate with them, when they back pendula, the way they like it, I'm not going to entertain it, because you must show leadership as members of parliament that you are talking to your public servant. You expect respect. You must respect them too. Thank you.
I didn't use any vulgar words.
Honorable Mosala, you're your turn now.
Thank you so much, Chair. I've got a question that I'll direct to the monitoring team. I think majority of them, monitoring and evaluation, planning, monitoring, and I think evaluation. On your report, on page number 14, you have mentioned that there is allegation of fraudulent payment, corruption, misallocation of RDP houses, and a lot. But your report is empty in terms of what happened to the, what is the consequent management measures, what happened? Is there anything happening or not? Number two of my question is directed to both the AG and the DPME. It is, just hang on. It's based on, regarding the constitution, the constitution prescribes that there should be a progressive realization of rights to citizens. The NDP reiterates that as well. In relation to the Department of Human Settlement, has the department done enough in terms of its policy legislation to comply with the constitutional mandate? That is the second one. And the third one is still going on the AG and the DPME. Your presentation are very silent on constitutional obligation of state department in providing housing to citizens. The AG only focused on administration as detailed in the constitution. Perhaps there's a gap in DPME and AG's reporting. Have to now critically look at the State Department and state entities in ensuring citizens right to housing. Is this feasible going forward in terms of your work? Thank you.
You want to take the second verse? Okay. Honorable
Chief, just one question. To the monitoring and evaluation thing. Generally, in the issues that you have also raised and the assessment by Auditor General, I'm sure you picking something which is systems that are not speaking together. And I think the department is empowered to assess the issue of systems from upfront, not waiting for the problems to happen. Just a fear if that perhaps is a program that is a moving well, or the challenges within the sectors as a whole, within sectors as a whole, so that they are able to obtain a very clear, integrated, coordinated program of government.
No, thank you very much. You have asked question. I've given you to ask question.
I've asked question, but I've got the right to raise my hand and ask if they ask.
I'm not recognizing it. I'm allowing them to respond, and then if there is time, we'll come back again. Yeah. So for monitoring and evaluation, mine will be. I'll ask it differently. From honorable member who has raised it. In terms of NDP, which is the program of government, it gives department mandates what they are supposed to do in 20 years time. If you assess them, are we able to assist, because you are in the president. For instance, if housing, because one thing that you have to look at is the fiscal that you have as a country to provide those services. Are we able to intervene at the level of the planning? If departments are not funded enough to realize the NDP objectives, and if we are intervening, but it will then be a challenge of fiscal. Why there is no engagement with the society, people, because government has got contracts with the people. If the people have contracted you on the NDP, and you have then you have challenges to meet those objectives because of resources. I think there is a gap where I don't see that interaction with the people. Secondly, the programs that departments are implementing are meant to reduce inequalities, eradicate poverty, create employment, and grow the economy. So in your assessment, are you able to say with this program that we are having in So I guess I've got a request that I think the interaction with the department, so that it has the link with Parliament, it will be very helpful as we do it quarterly. Then immediately, as we call the department, we should have the information that you have interacted with this department. This is what they said. And we then have to assist in making them to account. That will be very helpful. The second thing is that looking at the, and I must appreciate and thank for having given us the entire progress in terms of the plan, because this meeting is about dealing with annual plan. But because we are closing the MCFS, you were able to give us a picture of what has happened in the 5 years, and therefore it will then assist us in the next planning for the sixth parliament. On the issues of indicators, which were raised by Auditor General, which I must take it back to planning and monitoring. I know that you are evaluating the performance plan of the department. Are you not able to pick up these things and make department to change the performance indicators in time, such that we become preemptive of the challenge that department might have face in future? The last one is on the entities that were not audited by Auditor General coming into the system for the new system. What system were they using? Maybe just to give us a guide, because majority of these entities which were not audited by the Auditor General, they were getting clean audit, KPMG, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and all these things. Now they are assessed by Auditor General. They are lacking. Is it the issue of the system, how they were doing things? Just to give us a clue what is happening, because one would expect that finance, you are using one system, that is king what? King 1, 2, and 3, whatever, 10. So I just want to check, what is the problem? Why the system is not automatically be able to synchronize the as people going into the new system and assisting the audit not to be tampered with. The last thing is monitoring the role of treasury. Treasury receives, in terms of the PSMA, they receive the report, monthly report from the department, and they are the only people who can see the money inside the bank. All of us seated here, we don't see that money. It's only treasure, and defined by the constitution. How does treasury work with monitoring and evaluation to make sure that you can stop certain activities even before it happens? I'll give you an example. When I was in agriculture, there is famous dairy, very esteemed dairy. National Department approved that project, wanted to be implemented. Then from province, in the process, change the business plan, and the department withdraws that no, will not participate in the project. But provincial treasury supported that project, which for me, there was an alarm even before the project can be implemented. So how do monitoring and evaluation work with treasury to stop things to happen before than to come and react on Auditor General? Because Auditor General give us the picture after things have happened. How can we strengthen the monitoring part and even sharing information with portfolio committees to say we have raised these issues with this department, they are not responding. As we call them here as Parliament, then we are able to follow up on those issues and make sure that things that have been raised in between are being cleared. Because that, I think the important thing of government is to get us doing the right thing. And provide services to the people. Since you can share the response, you can start with yourself, sir.
Thank you. So I'll take it from the top, and thank you for the question. So the first one related to apartheid spatial patterns and, you know, what are then the measures that we are taking to acquire well-located land in order to begin to unravel that, okay? And that is a big question. Of course, as honourable members are aware, you know, part of it is, the big question is about giving the state and government greater capacity to expropriate. But over and above that, from the point of view of the department and its mandate, namely to ensure that we have human settlements and housing, particularly for the poor and disadvantaged, located in well-located areas. There's two big initiatives that's happening. The first is that they have now demarcated, and you can hear more about it from them, what are called priority development areas, housing development areas, right? Those are in areas where all future housing, human settlements development will take place, and no longer, and in areas where the poor are sent to the peripheries or apartheid spatial patterns are reinforced, those will be discouraged. And there's about 94 priority housing development areas. Secondly, and in connection with that, is that the Department of Public Works has started already with the process, and I'm not sure which portfolio committee, but you'll see there, I think they've already acquired 16,000 hectares of state land. So the first step is to say, okay, where is our land that is in control of the state, which is in well-located places, that we can already start developing? And that will then include, of course, municipal land and things like that, which, as the Honourable Member raised, that can easily be given to private developers and lost to the country. So those, I'm saying, are measures, but there's a lot more that will need to be done. So that takes the question of how we're proceeding to solve the issue of land. I don't mean to make it an easy question, but I'm saying from the point of view of human settlement, there's these two big initiatives which will ensure that human settlements now, and this means even at a provincial level and municipal level, housing development doesn't happen in ways that reinforce apartheid spatial patterns and marginalize our communities away from opportunities like jobs and so on. So they emphasize transport corridors, they're emphasizing, and that's going to be the new requirements, because you must remember that these are conditional grants. And because you have to meet now those kinds of conditions over and above what was previously. Then the issue of white town planning and process are so slow. I mean, that is at a municipal level, and it's been a very, very long time. And the Department of Cooperative Governance, with their municipal counterparts, have been approached to resolve that matter. At the municipal, which is, of course, a sphere, as we know, of government, but that's unacceptable. It's not only having an effect on, human settlements development, but we also know that it's also affecting business and investment decisions. In big cities, we've lost major investments. I mean, Hyundai, for example, eventually went to Botswana because Joburg was taking too long or something like that. So there's big implications for how that system is not operating well and so needs to be fixed. I don't have the solutions for that, but I'm just saying that GCOG is one of its key priorities to help municipalities fix that. Otherwise, it has implications for how fast development happens, both at social but also economic. Issue of, the breakdown of why the 1.1, that's out of the total of 452,000, the department failed to, or well, the department and its provinces failed to deliver 4,600. I don't have the breakdown of that, but information on which, that 400, the national target of 452,000, for example, will be distributed across provinces. I don't have that data with me, right? So all the provinces will say they'll do so much, and it all adds up to 452, right? So I'm not sure where the shortfall came from, which province, but I think it will be in the report from the department, where which particular province. But I think in overall terms, we are saying that 99% of their target was achieved for the delivery of houses. I won't respond to the comments and just acknowledge them, the issue of title use and the issue of services, right? Has the department reported on any actions they have taken to address issues raised by us? The way things happen is that as we know, right, and this will relate to, I suppose, other questions as well, and the chair pointed this out, financial performance is overseen by Treasury. As you said, they receive a financial report, it's I think section 130 of the PFMA, and those are reported quarterly to control authority, or meant to be, right? So that's firstly, that's the division of labor. The planning, monitoring and evaluation department does the monitoring for the results. Why the department came into existence was that previously they were only monitoring inputs, like have you spent your money and things like that. And you were saying, and what government recognizes is that's insufficient. We have to see whether you, the inputs you put in, like the people and the budget and the activities you've undertaken, have they led to results for citizens. And that part was missing, so that's our mandate. And that's why I would sit with a team of three people. I don't have a big department to monitor human settlements in it. So there is a division of labor, firstly. And the discrepancies in terms of financial performance will be picked up through the reports that Treasury, in terms of the PFMA, submits. Well, that's information and submits. We, on a quarterly basis, have what we call quarterly performance reviews, and there we interact with the department to see to what extent they are meeting the targets that they set out, what the issues are, and they report it to Cabinet, at which meetings we would make recommendations of where around how the performance gaps can be fixed. So that sort of kind of covers what our kind of role is. It is an issue that the department, even in terms of its financial performance, and notwithstanding what's been said, the department gets 32 billion, right? That's the money, public money we invest in the department, okay? The audit shows that money was used responsibly, am I right? Unqualified. So 32 billion rand of public money, taxpayers' money was used well. That's what the unqualified financial opinion is, am I right? In a sense that you found no material findings. And then it didn't get a clean audit because of the performance information. Compliance to legislation and constitution and those kinds of obligations and prescripts were fine. I'm talking about the department, I'm not talking about entities. And the area where it failed was in performance information. Right? And there were two major issues that relates to the indicators chosen and the reliability of performance information. So those are the two things that prevented it from getting a clean audit. So just to get a perspective, 32 billion rand of public money was, according to the audit, not used in a bad way, right? But couldn't get a clean audit because of that. So the point I'm making about that is that, and that sort of supports the view that the department is in fact progressing well, and that needs to be acknowledged. Now, what we would do is strengthen. We now have a situation where, because part of the review of the MTSF period was that there was this misalignment between what departments commit to in the national plan, like an MTSF, and then what happens when they do their own strategic planning and annual performance planning. Right? So what would happen is that you've got a target here in the MTSF, but when you go to departmental planning, those things are not properly reflected, so there's a misalignment. The decision by Cabinet is that we will give the departments now, or we will receive their strategic plans and annual performance plans and identify any discrepancies and say this doesn't tie up, and if they implement their strategic plan as it is, they're not going to meet the MTSS target. We've to that extent, we've supported that process by giving departments new frameworks for strategic plans and annual performance plans, and that includes how indicators will be defined and things like that. So I must say that the issue about I think the fees must fall was a national budget issue. Something to the tune of about $50 billion was needed, and National Treasury sought to address it by finding where it can draw that money from. I think human settlements lost about $10 billion. The municipal infrastructure lost about $8 billion over the MTEF. So that's why the housing target had to be reduced, because you can't, or, and even energy on the household electricity connections, they had a target of 150,000 and it was reduced to 120,000. So we can't hold them to those targets if the budgets are reduced. So that's why midway, when that's, those cuts happened, we reduced the target. On the issue of what those misallocations mean, so that's, as I said, oh, by the way, the you know, and as shown even in the Auditor General report, the department is identifying cases, and 80% of them are being investigated. So it's not as if all of these things are being ignored. There are. I'm not defending. I'm just saying that the you know, there are these are cases which the department have identified. So it's not really our words. The misallocation of RDP houses is how the department has identified where some of those 18, you know, what were some of the issues with those 18 cases. So misallocation, you correctly, I think, define it by saying that it, you know, there's a criteria, it wasn't measured and it went to the wrong people, right? And similarly, with allocation of scholarships, there's criteria for people to qualify and all that, but it's the misallocation. And that's been picked up. So the point is that, so there's a number of irregularities, these things are unfortunately only fully picked up when you have more exhaustive reports. So as I said, the first step in terms of financial irregularities is what Treasury brings to Parliament through its quarterly report. That's on the financial side, and that's where a particular type of oversight happens, and early warning systems. But at the end of the day, it's only in the annual audit that the details will emerge. It's one of those things that you can't just pick up. And I'm sure the Auditor General will agree. You can't pick up an irregularity until it surfaces through a proper audit. Even National Treasury won't be able to say, okay, you've allocated this money, show us whether, you know, proper prescripts were followed. As I indicated, the department has complied with constitutional and those kinds of prescripts, and that's even showed in the audit report. In the way that the MTSF is designed, those 8 intervention areas I mentioned in this table here is in fact the way in which it's meeting the obligation, the constitutional obligation to the right to decent housing. So upgrading of in-settlement, subsidized housing, those who don't have enough, those who don't qualify for subsidies but nevertheless don't have sufficient incomes to access bonds and get their own houses, the subsidies there, and then all the social housing and community residential units. I hope I'm covered everything, but I'm sure there's going to be a second round. So, the last set of questions, Chair, is related to what you said. Are we able to intervene at the planning level so that we don't get a mismatch? That in fact does happen at every turn. At the start of every new administration, when the five-year plan is, these targets and all that are done in conjunction with. We do get information, two types of information at that point. One is that, can this target be funded through your baseline, existing baseline? Right? So in other words, is the money already there over the NPF? The other is, if not, then what are you going to do? Are you going to reprioritize so that redundant of programs and so on, you redirect money from there? And then if yes, how are you going to do that? And then there's a category for that still remains that will require new funding. All of that is supposed to be resolved. And as you know, honorable members, we then issue the budget planning and budget framework along with National Treasury. So we try to reach that alignment so that there isn't a problem with budgets. And in the last period, there hasn't really been in the case of human settlements, except as I said, for that period when the national budgets were cut for a number of departments. So we are trying to proactively support the process through the strategic planning and APP framework so that the indicators are better specified. The issue is where we get the difficulty is that, of course, the MCSF is a targeted set of indicators, and a department's mandate is much broader and larger. And the weaker specification of indicators is for those things that are not in the necessarily MCSF, right? And so, because if you look at these indicators that I presented, they're clear. But each department, of course, does more than what the MCSF say because it has a broader mandate, right? And I think it's that area. So we'll have to find a way to see how we can support them so that those other indicators which come out through the audit process are properly specified and can be measurable and things like that. I touched on the role of National Treasury. We have been now requested by, in fact, the Standing Committee on Appropriations in its last meeting and a recommendation that that we need to combine the National Treasury reports and ours, the performance quarterly performance report, so that we are able to see the full picture. And so that will be happening on a more regular basis and will be taken to the parliamentary oversight bodies. So going forward in the new period, you should see you should receive both quarterly performance reports as well as the Treasury financial report together. Our minister is just signing off on that response to the Standing Committee on Appropriations to confirm that will be the arrangement going forward. And then on top of that, what we, the Treasury and us, we will be doing is we meet on a quarterly basis or even on a biannual, what we call, where we have budget and performance dialogue. So we call the department in at a joint meeting with National Treasury and ourselves to discuss their performances over that period, both in budget terms and in terms of targets achieved and things like that. And that's when we interact, we get explanations for any discrepancies and use that to prepare the reports for Parliament on a regular basis. I'm hoping that that covered all the questions, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'll try and answer the questions of the Honourable Members as simple as I can without using the audit jargon. So we are not making sense. I'm willing to try again if the members don't understand. The first question relates to the renewal of our mandate. The question there was, have we implemented the three options in any of our audits? Honourable Member, the approach that the AG took when this was or came into effect was to use a phased-in approach, and that entailed selecting certain audits in which this would then be implemented as some sort of a trial run. Fortunately or unfortunately, none of the audits in the human settlement sector were selected for that process. So for the, as much as it was effective, for the 18-19 audit, we didn't implement it in any of these audits for the human settlement sector. But definitely for the 19-20, the cycle that is going to start now, we will implement it across all our audits. I suppose if we then look at the sector, the only area in which it was implemented was in the Free State. So I'm just saying from a national point of view, when we look at the department and the entities, none of them were selected. But if we look at the overall sector, the Free State province was elected as one of those where it will be implemented. But the last I checked, that audit had not been completed. So I think we can then see at Free State, once that audit has been finalized, what the impact of the amended Public Audit Act was. And the next question was, in terms of penalizing the department, I think the question from the Honourable Member was, can we penalize the department if they do not meet their targets? Now that would be beyond our scope and our mandate, because that requires oversight. And I think I did mention at the beginning, the very first slide, where I said we are not responsible for oversight or for providing oversight in entities in the department. However, we enable those that are responsible. So from penalizing our entities if they do not meet their targets, that would be beyond our scope. So even the expanded mandate from the PAA point of view would not allow us to penalize audits or our auditees when they do not meet their targets. So basically what we report on is the usefulness and the reliability of whatever information that they report as their achievements. And we don't go beyond that and comment. We don't even comment on the level of achievement. So we just say, this is what the entity is reporting has achieved. We then just issue assurance on whether that is useful and reliable information. The next question was around CISOs on the proposals and recommendations. It is noted your comment, Honourable Member, around management and the person leading CISOs. However, what we've identified, the issue is around the finance department. So this issue that has been recurring over the years, which relates to the levies that are not collected, it's in the domain of the finance division. At CISOs, there's no CFO. There's not even, in fact, for the year under review, there was not even an acting CFO. So So in the finance department itself, there's no one that is accountable for that. So it becomes difficult without the inputs of the finance department to come up with a process and a plan, you know, that would be able to address the issue around levies collection. In terms of what should have happened in relation to the fees must fall, I think my colleague from the BME addressed that issue, and I don't have anything to add in terms of his response. The next question was around the binding remedial action. Was this always in practice, or is it something that's new? I think the Honourable Member made a comment that the recommendations are just that. So recommendations are not binding, if I understood you correctly, Member. Indeed, initially when we identify material irregularity, we will provide a recommendation to the accounting authority to say this is how you should address it. Now, failure to address that, we then have what we call a remedial action. It is that remedial action that becomes binding. So basically we provide the entities enough opportunities to address whatever non-compliance is there. So only at the point where they fail to, you know, implement the recommendation, then we have a remedial action. So that is the binding remedial action. And then failure to then implement that remedial action then leads to this certificate of debt, which then touches on to other questions in terms of, oh, it has not been there, it was not practiced. So this is coming through in terms of the amendment to the Act. So it is legislation, in essence, through the amending of the Public Audit Act. So it was not there, and it is also not retrospective. So it is applicable prospectively going forward. And the accounting body we referred to. In essence, I think the Honourable Chair tried to assist me and made reference to the PFMA. So in essence, the PFMA refers to the accounting officer, which is the accounting office for the department, as well as the accounting authority, which in most cases is the board of the public entity. So when this is addressed to that accounting officer / accounting authority, it is either to the board, which would be the board chairperson and any other board member that then is involved, or the accounting officer if it's a department, which is the director general. So that is the accounting body that we make reference to. And also your concern that do they know, you know, that this is applicable. We are going through processes where we hold workshops with all the accounting officers and with all the accounting authorities. So which is similar to that capacity session we had with the portfolio committee in August, if I remember. So we do hold workshops where we explain the implications of these amendments to our Audit Act. The next question was around policy to comply with the constitution and looking at the citizens' right to housing. I think from our side, in terms of the processes, we do look at in all the acts that are applicable to that particular entity, as well as any documents. I think you mentioned the NTP as an example. So, as part of us planning for the audit, we do look at the constitution and the requirements of the constitution, the PFMA, the NDP, the medium-term strategic framework, you know, estimates of, and any other document or act that is specific to that particular audit. We then say, in terms of the mandate that particular entity has, and that mandate may come from all these different documents and acts, we then assess, do they apply with those mandates or the mandate given by those different documents. And then from a performance point of view, then provide an opinion or conclusion on whether they applied and complied with those particular documents in them implementing. So our role then is to issue an assurance to say that indeed their performance information, for example, as reported, was for example complete in terms of the requirements of those documents. So we do consider those in our audit, and in our audit outcomes, they also reflect as such. And the next question is, I think it was a comment, Honorable Chair, our interactions with the department should somehow then filter to the portfolio committee before the committee meets with the department and its entities. So that is noted, Chair. And I think the last question, unless there was one that I've left out, why do audits differ when they are taken over by the AG? Do they use a different system all of a sudden? The answer, Honorable Chair, is that there isn't a change in the system. What normally happens is that the regression, in most cases, comes from the performance information as well as the compliance. So you would find that when it comes to the audit of the financial statements, there usually isn't much of a difference. And the reason or the root cause for that is that as the office of the AG, we are more or less experts when it comes to the audit of performance information and compliance with it. So our private firm colleagues, not all of their audits will necessarily have to report on these two areas. So they might not necessarily have as much of expertise as the auditor general when it comes to those two particular areas. So that's why then when we take over the audit, then perhaps we audit those two with much more vigor, which then we may identify areas which other auditors may not necessarily identify. But there are processes to bridge that gap, where we provide more oversight whenever the private firm are auditing these public entities. So we provide more oversight and assist them in terms of the procedures that we would normally perform, and then just maybe assist them in also performing similar audits. So I think over time that gap will be closed, Chair. I don't know if there's any other questions that I did not address.
Okay, you have responded to all the questions.
Thank you very much, Mr.
It is adjourned.